I'm not a loser, but sometimes I do loser things.
In the event that this fails, they'll never be able to come to me and say, hey, remember that podcast you did that didn't go so well? No, that was our podcast. We did that.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome to episode 27 of the In My Own Words podcast. Happy Sunday, everybody. Happy Mother's Day. A super special Sunday. Shout out to all of my mothers out there that may be listening to the podcast and watching us on YouTube. Really appreciate all that you do for the world, including just giving life to the world. Where would we be without our mothers? So shout out to all the mothers on this great Sunday. I hope all of you guys are having a beautiful and wonderful Sunday or whatever day you may be listening to this. I want to start out by saying thank you to you guys. Let me give you guys a round of applause. Thank you so much for listening and watching to episode 26 of the In My Own Words podcast, aka Two Mugs in a Movie, aka my first guest spot. It was really cool to have a guest on the show. Austin was the first guest on the show, but will not be the last guest on the show. And it will not be the last time that you see myself on screen with Austin. I can promise you that. I want to do a bunch of different things with Austin because I think Austin is just really dope and is a really cool guy. But also, in addition to that, we are going to do more Two Mugs in a movie reviews when more movies come out. That we really care about and really want to talk about. And so a cool thing that you guys could do is let us know if there's a movie that you'd like us to discuss on the podcast for Two Mugs in a Movie. You can tweet me, text me, Instagram, DM me, Facebook message me, or just holler at me when you see me. All of those things are great. Also, by the way, I love, love, love the people that send me videos and text messages and audio messages on Instagram, or hit me directly on my phone, text me while they're listening to the podcast, or even tweet me while they're listening to the podcast. Number one, I love that I have a strong enough or I'm close enough to the people who listen to the work that I do that you can actually reach out to me and text me or call me, or when you see me, you're like, yo, let me tell you about the podcast. I love, love, love that. I also love the fact that people want to talk to me as I'm doing it, right? And so if I'm having a conversation with the world, right, which is the intention behind this podcast, it's really dope when the world talks back. So don't stop doing it. Don't think that you're bothering me. It's a really, really great thing. I really, really appreciate it. And it really makes me smile. You have no idea.
Breaking news.
All right, we got breaking news. Today, Sunday, Mother's Day, May 12th, is it? What is it? It's actually like 1:30 in the morning right now, so it is Mother's Day. It's a legit happy Sunday. but Mother's Day, 2 p.m., on my YouTube channel, on my Facebook page, I am dropping my very first documentary. Man, I am super excited about this documentary. The documentary is for my mom on Mother's Day. It's called A Video for Moms. And for those of you who don't know, in 2015, we lost, and I say we because I'm the oldest of eight, we lost our mom due to a bout with cancer. And man, it's just been a tricky road ever since then. There's a bunch of different twists and turns that everyone kind of, you know, all of our stories kind of took a twist and turns. So I have, my mother had seven boys and one girl, and we were all different, but still kind of all the same. Even the twins, right? So they had two sets of twins, which you'll see in the documentary. One thing that was really dope about the documentary is that I got everyone to participate in the documentary. So when you're talking about adults, when you're talking about people that or do a good job of just going on with life and maybe not the greatest job at always wearing their feelings or their emotions on their sleeves, or even being willing to talk about some of the really tough things that we've had to endure. So the fact that we can get everybody together, everybody participated, everybody really opened up and shared things. Even my brother Tyrell, you'll see him in a documentary. Tyrell says like a total of 17 words a week. Like that's like his limit. That includes school, talking to his girlfriend or whatever, talking to his parents, talking to me. That includes everything. So for him to get on camera and say something was a really big deal. My brother Tymon, who's the youngest out of the bunch, he jumped on camera. He said a lot. You'll meet Taylor and Tyler. That's the second set of twins. Thomas and Timothy, the first set of twins. And then my sister Tonisha, who I know she really took losing our mom really, really hard. And so the fact that she was able to jump on camera, I'm really, really appreciative of that. And then last but certainly not least, the person who the documentary is kind of centered around, his story and his telling of the story, since he was here before it all, my pop. So give me a round of applause for my family. But today at 2 p.m., Mother's Day, on my YouTube channel, we are going to premiere this documentary, and I'm super, super excited about it. I will say that it was the most difficult video that I've ever done. You guys know I do a video a week at minimum. Summertime is coming up, so we're going to start our family vlogs again, so they'll be doing videos then. I've been doing videos for years, but this one was the most difficult because, one, it was trying to take 3 hours of content and somehow put it all together in a cohesive story that I could tell in 30 minutes. That was really difficult. And then also to listen to the stories and the feelings and the emotions, and even in some cases watch the tears over and over and over and over again, trying to edit it and get it just right. That was very, very emotionally taxing. And then of course, when you're recording and this is my first documentary, there are a bunch of things that I missed. I woke up one day and jumped on the computer to do some editing and there was just footage missing. I don't know where this footage is now. I still haven't been able to find it. And so that's emotionally taxing. We shot this last month and now we're putting it out this month. It literally hasn't been more than 3 or 4 weeks since we recorded it, and now we're releasing it to the world for everyone to see. And so that comes with its own level of stress and emotional taxation, if I may. And so, but I will say it's the best Mother's Day video that I could make. It's the best Mother's Day video that I could make. And my intentions with the video is to make sure that we do a good job of expressing ourselves and telling our story, but doing it in a way that could help other people, right? And I've said it on this podcast, I say it all the time, one of the most selfish things you could do is go through something in life and not share what you've learned or not share how you made it through with other people. You can save people a lot of headache, a lot of heartache, a lot of pain, a lot of stress, a lot of not, you know, feeling alone by just sharing your perspective on, you know, what you went through. And it doesn't have to be the right thing. It doesn't have to be the best thing, quote unquote, air quotes, if you're listening to this. But it has to be the true thing. What truly happened, how you truly deal with things, how you truly go through things, I think is what really unlocks the answers in other people, right? People already have the answers to whatever problems are going to arise. I really believe that any problem that you're faced with in your life, the answers already exist inside of you. Sometimes we just need a little help, a little push, and someone helping us to realize those answers or to bring those answers up to the surface. And that's my intentions with this documentary. I want to help those families who have lost loved ones, and unfortunately, the families who will lose loved ones, you know, to see another family that is going through it, taking it day by day and just trying to figure it out. So please, 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 it would mean the world to me for you guys to watch this video, releasing it at 2 p.m. on Facebook, on YouTube. I will leave the links in the bio, in the show notes on whatever platform you're listening to this on. So if it's on YouTube or on Apple or Spotify or wherever you may be listening to this, check out my YouTube page today at 2 p.m. We're going to premiere this video. Now, let's get into the real deal of the show. We got to do some wow awards. I don't know where to start. There's two wow awards that I want to give. I don't know where to start. I think I know where I want to start. Let's start here.
Oh my God! Wow!
I gotta start with my Lakers. Now listen, if you're a Lakers fan and you're not in distress right now, you're not a Lakers fan. There's not a Lakers fan that exists right now that isn't in distress thinking, what are we doing? So a couple of hours ago, before I went live to record this podcast, the Lakers decided to hire Frank Vogel as their coach. Let me give a round of applause for Frank Vogel. I can tell you, with this Frank Vogel hiring, my life is just funny. So you guys who have been listening to me from the beginning know that I'm a Lakers-Pacers fan. Let me switch that. I'm a Pacers-Lakers fan. Growing up as a child, I started out being a Lakers fan. I had family members and uncles that were Lakers fans. All I saw was Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Those are the only two basketball players I knew throughout the early stages of my childhood. It wasn't until I think the Bulls played the Pacers in the 90s when I realized we actually had a team here that was like right downtown that I could go see. I was like, oh, why do you guys got me rooting for this team that I'll probably never see in real life? And I can go see a team that's right there. And so I fell in love with the Lakers and then discovered the Pacers. And because I am loyal to the soil, I root for the Pacers. And whenever the two meet, once or twice a year, and if it ever happens in the finals like it did in the early 2000s, I'm always rooting for the home team. But I would be lying to you if I told you my heart didn't rest with the Lakers, right? I love the Pacers, root for the Pacers, but my heart is with the Lakers the majority of the time. And so it has been very, very difficult to watch the Lakers, honestly, since 2010. 2011 and 12 were good seasons as well, but 2010 is the last championship that we won, and it's been difficult to watch them since then. Now, what's going on right now is so frustrating because it seems as though we don't want to win. Let me stop being nice about it. I think this is exactly what I think the Lakers should do. I think the Buss family, mainly Jeannie Buss, should bow out and sell the team. I think they should completely bow out and sell the team. From all accounts, her brother, and whoever they may or may not be taking advice from, they seem to be inept and incapable of running a franchise with so much lore, so much greatness, so much championship pedigree like the Lakers. A franchise that is so important to the NBA should not be ran by people like this. Now, I'm not talking about them personally. I don't know Jeannie Buss personally. I don't know her brother personally. But what I do know is that ever since Dr. Buss passed away, may he rest in peace, the team hasn't been the same. There has been zero stability in the front office. There's been zero wins on the court. There's been zero championship aspirations. This is the first year since Kobe was retired where there's some uptick of hope that the LA Lakers are going to be fine again, that the LA Lakers are going to be in championship contention once again. So let me break it down for you guys who are not in the loop of what we're talking about, because I can jump on this train and get going really, really fast. And I want to make sure that I bring people with me on this one, because this one is super important. So the Lakers have a guy. You may have heard of him. His name is LeBron James, King James of Akron, Ohio, the three-time champion, twice with the Heat, once with the Cavs, now in L.A., donning the great purple and gold, the same purple and gold that Magic Johnson wore, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, I could go on and on and on, Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bryant, and one Tyronn Lue. Now, don't get it confused. I'm not saying that Tyronn Lue was the same caliber of player as the other people that I mentioned, but it's important in this story because LeBron, one of the championships that he won was with one Tyronn Lue. And now Tyronn Lue is no longer coaching in Cleveland. LeBron's no longer in Cleveland. LeBron is with the Lakers. The Lakers have a coaching opening. And guess what? Ty Lue's not doing anything. Sounds like a good idea to me to get Ty Lue on the phone and bring him to Lakerland and make sure that we can get another championship out of LeBron before he retires. Now, listen to this. Ty Lue actually checks all the boxes traditionally of what Lakers look for in a coach. He's smart. He has basketball acumen. He's won a championship already, so he has championship pedigree. He already would have great buy-in with the best player on the team. All of those things are super, super important. And we never say this, but we love it when we get a coach who's played for the team before. That's why Luke Walton was great. It wasn't his little run where he ran 23 games or whatever with the Warriors. It wasn't that his dad was an NBA Hall of Famer. It was that he donned the purple and gold during the championship era. That's why Brian Shaw's a great pick, right? And so if you look at it, Ty Lue checks every box. And for some bonehead reason, they decide that they still want to ruin this for us somehow. I hear that Jeannie Buss is taking information from her longtime boyfriend and potential fiance, Phil Jackson. Now, I love Phil Jackson, not as a Bulls coach, but as a Lakers coach. He did a lot for the franchise. He got Kobe his 5 championships. But if he's not sitting on that bench, every other basketball decision that he's made in the past 10 years have been very, very...
Oh, my God! Wow!
Very, 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 very wow-worthy. Very wow-worthy. I don't even want to bring up the Knicks. But if you're a New York Knicks fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Outside of Kristaps Porzingis, every decision that he made there was completely horrible. I also hear Jeannie Buss is taking information from her best friend's husband, who happens to be Kurt Rambis. They are telling Tyronn Lue that in order to come here and play with the guy, LeBron James, who you've already coached to a championship, who, from all accounts, wants you on the staff, wants you to be the head coach, wants you to lead him to more championships, you have to play by our rules. You have to take less money than any other coaching job you would ever have to get. The term is going to be less. Luke Walton got fired and got a 5-year deal. They're going to bring Ty Lue in as a 3-year deal, letting him know that they're not committed to him as a coach. They're only committed to him as a coach as it relates to LeBron, because LeBron has 3 years left on his deal. And then, oh, by the way, we have to pick your staff for you. You have to do what?
Oh, my God. Wow.
That is ridiculous for you to call in a head coach and then tell him you're going to pick his staff. Jason Kidd has to be on your staff. Kurt Rambis has to be on your staff. I'm with Ty Lue. If those people have to be on my staff, I'll just leave. Why don't you hire them? If you want Jason Kidd on the staff so bad, why don't you hire him as a head coach? He has head coaching experience. He doesn't have championship pedigree, but he has head coaching experience. He never wore the purple and gold, but he played in the NBA. He's one of the greatest point guards of all time. Why don't you just give him the job and make him the head coach? And then out of nowhere, in flies Frank Vogel. Now, what's interesting to me about Frank Vogel is that he is the former Pacers coach. He coached our team when we had one Paul George, Danny Granger, that era of Pacers when LeBron was actually in Miami. The funny thing is, everybody's already talking about how LeBron's going to get Frank Vogel fired. He already did that. He got him fired in Indiana. I was here for it. I was here for D-Wade and LeBron coming in town, throwing oops, embarrassing us, running us off the court, for Frank Vogel to get fired. And now you bring him in to coach me? On a scale of 0 to 0, how many respect points do you think Frank Vogel has with LeBron? And this is not saying Frank Vogel is a bad coach, but it is asking, what has Frank Vogel done since LeBron got him fired the last time? Have you heard from him? I haven't. Not to say he wasn't doing anything, but I don't think he was coaching an NBA team. I don't think he was on an NBA staff. I think LeBron sent him on and he was there until 3 hours ago. This very much so reminds me of towards the end of Kobe's career, when we had a chance to get Phil Jackson back on the bench. And for whatever reason, before we could pull it off, they hired Mike D'Antoni who we've all been seeing is not a great basketball coach when it comes to winning championships. Mike D'Antoni has a system. He's in love with the system. He runs his system, and he never wins with it. But he loves it, so, you know, that's good. Do something you love, but maybe be good at it too. Do something you love that's also effective. That's what I would say. But it's just disgusting what's going on with the Lakers right now. It doesn't seem like we are being ran properly as a franchise. It doesn't seem like the organization is in good hands. It seems like the typical thing that happens with second and third generation business owners, right? Dad works so hard to build this thing from the ground up. He puts all this blood, sweat, and tears in it, right? A lot of sweat equity, a lot of cash, a lot of hunger, coming from nothing or little to nothing or less than what you have. And you grind your way to the top and you create this beautiful, amazing, top-of-the-line business. Innovative, groundbreaking, highly ran, set the standard in NBA and the NBA for what a franchise should be. And then, unfortunately, you pass away, as we all do. And then here comes your kids, and your kids start to run that business into the ground. I honestly think that they should find somebody to buy it for $1, $2, $3 billion, $4 billion, $5 billion, $10 billion. It doesn't matter. And they should just go find something else to do other than ruin the lives of Lakers fans. I'm hearing Clippers fans talk crazy to Lakers fans. Can you believe that? Clippers fans. I've only gone through this one other time in my life where I'm getting hate from Clippers fans. And that's when, like, they had Darius Miles and they thought for whatever reason they were, like, doing this, thought they were going to be good. It didn't work. I wasn't worried about it then. And honestly, I'm not worried about it now. I do think the Lakers will recover, but it is going to take some drastic measures. I hear Kyrie's thinking about coming into town. I think that would definitely help. But also, I hear that the Clippers may be getting Kawhi. I don't mind a competitive LA, but until you hang 16 banners, this is never going to be a Clipper town. It's always going to be Lakers town. It's always going to be the Lake Show. It's always going to be the Staples Center. It's always going to be home of the LA Lakers and the little brother, the LA Clippers. Regardless of how, they would have to really, really screw this up for a long period of time for the Clippers to be the team in LA. You can always be the team of the moment, but Darius Miles isn't the logo. Chris Paul isn't the logo. Patrick Beverly isn't the logo. Hang a banner, and then we can talk about it. I had to get that off my chest. Thank you so much for going through that with me. That was super important. I have another wild word for you guys.
Wow.
I have to give a wild word for everyone that is shaming and tearing down Ayesha Curry. Now, if you guys don't know, Ayesha Curry is the wife of Steph Curry, the beast that just eliminated Mike D'Antoni and the Rockets from the playoffs. And she went on Red Table Talk and... let's just listen to what she said. Before we do that, I do want to say a lot of things go on at the Red Table that come out to be very controversial and not good for the guests on the Red Table. I'm just saying maybe you should think about it a couple times before you go on the Red Table. But let's listen to what Ayesha Curry had to say this week on Red Table.
That way, I really had to have more compassion and more understanding.
Something that really bothers me and, like, honestly has given me a sense of a little bit of an insecurity is the fact that, yeah, like, there are all these women, like, throwing themselves. But me, like, the past 10 years, like, I don't have any of that. Like, I have zero, this sounds weird, but, like, male attention. And so then, like, I begin to internalize it. And I'm like, is something wrong with
me? You're not looking.
But I'm going to tell you something else, too. When your radar's turned off, because I dealt with that for years, too. Like, and I was young. Like you.
Yeah, like
oh, my God.
Fair.
I mean.
Because I don't want it. But it would be nice to know that, like, someone's looking.
But when your radar's turned off.
Be nice to know that someone's looking. I like how they didn't even let her finish all the way before they just jumped in. But I need to give this to all the people that are hating on this woman. Let me tell you why I'm giving you a wild award. It's May. Do you know what May is? May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And if you watch the full clip and not just the partial clip that's been floating around on the internet, she's talking about, they're talking about at the table having anxiety and having these unwelcomed and sometimes unfounded, ungrounded thoughts, right? And so they're all talking about some of these thoughts they have, you know, Willow and what's the youngest one's name? Sidell or something. They're all talking about this anxiety. And then they start talking about the groupies thing, and we go into the clip that we're talking about, right? So that's one reason, right? It's Mental Health Awareness Month. And sometimes it's not about what you say or how you say it, but when you say it. The timing is super, super important. And so to attack someone when they're telling you about something that they're dealing with mentally during Mental Health Awareness Month, it's just poor timing. That's one thing. Number two, I think it's super important to call out that it is Mother's Day. And they have all these mothers on the show expressing themselves, all these mothers and Willow expressing themselves about how they feel about being a mother and then a wife of these NBA players. And here you guys come tear them down, right? You want people to be real, but then when they're real, they can't take it. Now, I've said those things, and I'm going to give you your wow award. And then I'm going to also say that she's wrong. Can I do both of those things? Can I say that you guys are wrong for talking about Ayesha Curry? And then can I also say Ayesha Curry was wrong herself? Check me out. This is what I mean. She mentioned it as an insecurity, meaning that she knows that it's a weak spot for her. She knows that it's something that is maybe not the most rational of thoughts, maybe not something that she wants to keep with her as she moves forward in life. I think she brought it up to say, hey, I know I'm wrong about this, but this is honestly how I feel. And I think that that's why they were able to jump in and semi-chastise her a little bit on set and just say, hey, no, that's dangerous. Hey, no, you don't want to do that. Hey, no, it's not what you think. I've been there. Here's what's going on. Here's how I was feeling. You know, that's not really what you think it is. Your radar is turned off, right? So he's mentioning this as a weakness. That level of transparency is not something that we're often used to seeing. And I think that is what triggered people. Some people said, oh, you can never feel that way. You can never, look, fam, you can't tell people how to feel. Acting on something is a completely different game. Now, if she said, I felt that way, and so I went to Toronto, and I saw Drake, I don't know how Drake got in this conversation. It just seems like the guy that people go to when they're heartbroken because he's always singing about him. But I saw Drake and we did a thing during halftime and now I feel great. And I went back to Steph and it's like, okay, yo, that's, you took it too far. You took it way too far. But what she was saying is she has this feeling and she's going off this feeling, this emotion, not logic, not rationale. Just this feeling, and I can identify with the feeling, not because I've needed the female attention or the female validation outside of my marriage, but I can identify with a woman, a wife, losing her identity as a part of her role. Let me break that down. I identify with a woman saying, you know what? I am Ayesha, the wife here. I am Ayesha, the mom, but I don't get to be Ayesha, the human being. You see what I mean? There's been several times where Michelle and I talk and she's like, yeah, today, all day, I went on this field trip and I was Tamia's mom. Like that was my identity. That's who I am. Everyone who was around me saw me as that's Tamia's mom. That's Trinaya's mom, right? That's actually, she works at the school and that's what they say when we see them out in public. Oh, look, that's Trinaya's mom. That's Tamia's mom. That's Tiana's mom. That's how she's identified, right? And so all day in the world, she's being their mom. And then she comes home, she's still their mom. And then she goes somewhere with me and that's Tony's wife. So we go through this whole cycle of the day. And it's like, okay, well, when does she just get to be Michelle? And that's important.
Think about that. Think about when a woman has so many roles and so many people to take care of, which all of you women do. You got so many people to take care of, so many burdens on your back to make sure that everyone is okay. And you have to be this person for that person and this person for these people. And it's very easy to go about your life being a great wife and being a great mom and lose your own identity. Lose the person that you are. And they talked about that on the episode as well, right? You get married and then you start to become so-and-so's wife. And then you start having kids. And so you're a mom and then the kid leaves and you're like, whoa, who am I? I don't know who I am anymore. So I think that's one perspective that not a lot of people are taking into account when they are shaming or throwing shade at Aisha Curry or just jumping at, oh, she wants male attention. She says she didn't want it. Actually, if you listen to the clip, she's like, I don't want it, but it'd be nice to know someone's looking. Let's break that part of it down as well. I think the knowing that someone is looking is a part of having your own identity. You know what nostalgia is? You know when you hearken back to a time where things seemed simpler or things were different and you remember that time, remember the things that were going on? It happens a lot with our favorite music artists, right? They're not making the music today that they made during that time, and so you want them to make their old stuff, right? I was having a debate or a conversation with someone on Twitter and they were saying, man, this Jay-Z album is amazing. I don't know why people didn't love it when it came out. It's like, well, it was new. It wasn't old Jay, right? Jay-Z said, if you want my old stuff, buy my old album. It wasn't old Jay. Everybody wanted the old Jay-Z, and he was taking us to the new Jay-Z. So sometimes when you listen to those old songs, you don't just hear the song. You hear where you were at the time when you heard the song, if that makes sense. You hear and smell what you heard and smelled during those times. You start to feel young and free and who you were at those times. When she's thinking about the times when she had her own identity, that was a part of the experience. It was prior to being married. It was prior to being Riley's mom. It was prior to being Steph's wife. She was just Aisha, a beautiful lady that men would come and talk to. That was a part of the identity, is she couldn't go anywhere without men talking to her. That male attention, which happens to a lot of single women. And so now you get into a position where you don't have that anymore. It could start to play on your insecurities. And everyone has insecurities. And everyone's insecurities can be played on depending on your situation. And so she has insecurities about the weight that she's gained. She has insecurities about how she looks, how she fits in this dress, whether she feels sexy or not, X, Y, and Z. Anything can start to play on those insecurities. It's super easy for something to pop up just like that, and it starts to play on your insecurities, and you start to say, well, you know what? Well, that's not happening anymore. And you know what? This doesn't happen to you anymore. And so you know what? Maybe you are fat. Maybe you're not cute. Maybe you don't look good. All these negative thoughts start to just build and cycle into your head like an anxiety attack or a panic attack just based off those insecurities. Think about when you talk to your girl and you give her a compliment. You talk to your lady and you say, oh, you are beautiful. Girl, you better not, you know, you play around. Girl, you better not leave me. Girl, you better watch yourself when you go out to the store, blah, blah, blah. How many times has she said, don't nobody want me but you? That's a part of that insecurity. That's a part of that definition, right? The only people that desire me are the ones that need something from me on a daily basis. My husband and my kids. All of that was overlooked for just a hot take on the internet. Aisha has everything in the world and she still is a human. Yeah, she is. Having a husband that could pull up from 35 feet out does not make you no longer human. Right? Being a multimillionaire, having a YouTube show does not make you no longer human. Right? We got to stop deifying these celebrities. They're humans just like we are, and they have insecurities and problems and issues just like we do. So, again, I don't agree with her feelings and the thoughts and the things that she said, but I don't think she does either.
I think she was telling us, this is something I'm struggling with, and the struggle is there because she knows that it's not right. It's not something that she should be thinking or should be desiring or should have floating around in her head, yet it's there. And so salute to her for being transparent enough and woman enough to just step out and say, hey, this is what I'm going through right now. And it's really, really interesting to reveal those things without a proper solution, just to be open to the world and open to whatever answers may come your way. So I want to salute to her for that. Matter of fact, let me give Aisha Curry a round of applause. All right, last before we go, I want to do something since it is Mother's Day. I want to share a few quick things about my mom that I really love and I miss and I appreciate, especially with the documentary coming out. I think it's super important. One of the things that you'll see on the documentary, it is my family members getting interviewed and I'm doing the interviewing. And so I don't inject a lot of my personal stories or my memories of moms. I kind of let them tell their stories. And so I want to take this time to just tell a little bit about my mom. So my mom was one of the strongest people I had ever met. And not just because she fought cancer twice and won, not just because she had 8 children and 2 sets of twins back to back, but just because the mindset that she had to always go for more, be better, do better, and strive for more. One of the things she would tell me if I would complain or say this is too hard or this is too tough or, man, this is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be, she would tell me that anything that's worth having is worth working for. Anything that's worth having is worth working for. That means that whatever you're going after, once you get it, if it's valuable, it's going to be worth the work that you put into it. And if you can get it without work, it's probably not worth much. That's something that she constantly drilled into my head every day, every week, every year, every month. Anytime I would try something new, she would say, anything that's worth having is worth working for. And so I even say that to myself now when I'm going through maybe some difficult times or things seem like they're not working out as easily as I thought they would be, as I had played it up in my mind. And I would say, man, anything that's worth having is worth working for. So I really, really love and appreciate her for that and leaving me with those jewels before she left. One really cool thing about me and mom's relationship is, of course, she taught me everything that I knew, right? Taught me how to walk and, you know, all the talk and all the other things. I remember her teaching me numbers and playing memorization games with me and helping me learn scriptures through songs. You know, we had a song for Psalms 100. We had a song for Romans chapter 6. We had a song for all of these scriptures. But what was really cool and kind of like a story arc kind of way is, you know, at the beginning of my life, she taught me. And at the end of my life, at the end of her life, I was able to teach her. It was really cool to kind of have that go full circle. And now the student has become the teacher, so to speak. Right. She was going through certain things in life that she was trying to figure out, whether it be from an emotional perspective or psychological or a spiritual perspective. And she would call me and say, hey, what do you think about this? Or help me out with this, huh? I can't get my mind to do this, and I know my mind needs to be at this space, so help my mind get to this space. Or you know what? I need a book recommendation on X, Y, and Z. I read this scripture, and tell me what you think about this scripture. It was really, really dope to be able to have that relationship where I was able to repay her on an emotional level, right? Not financially, but on an emotional level, to be able to pour into her the way that she poured into me all of those years growing up. So really, really dope. And another thing that I want to say is my mom was convicted and convinced in what she believed. And no matter how sick she got, didn't matter when they gave her 3 months to live. It didn't matter when they sent her home on hospice. It didn't matter the day before, 24 hours within her last breath. She always stayed with God and did things for God and lived for God. It was one of the most incredible things to see her literally on her deathbed, less than 24 hours of life left in her body. And she's reading scriptures and got to the point where she couldn't physically sit up and read scriptures anymore. So she would call people and have them read scriptures to her to comfort her in her last days. And so I want to say happy Mother's Day to moms, my mother. Happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers out there that may be listening to it, to you and your mothers. I appreciate anybody that is willing to endure and take on all the things that a mother has to take on a daily basis. As a dad, I see it up close. I see it from a distance. And it's a job that I'm not going to sign up for. But I really, really appreciate it. And so I hope you guys have a good one. I'll see you guys next week.